Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast on this 28th of November, 2016. As we discuss the world of sports and pop culture, as always, the call number is 347-215-6180. As we look back at a week number 12 in the league where no contract is guaranteed, Eagles, Green Bay just about to kick off in Philadelphia. Philadelphia has been dominant at home. Yeah, of course, had wins over Atlanta and Pittsburgh. So they've been, again, they've been great at home. We'll see what Green Bay can do. Green Bay, we know their season is certainly on the ropes. Frankly, I mean, their season is basically over. But a loss here would just basically, to me, seal the deal in terms of their playoff fate for 2016. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at William Gerald or go to Instagram and follow me at Rillo Gerald Quinn. A lot to talk about. Hope you enjoyed your Thanksgiving holiday, your Thanksgiving weekend, the holiday overall, as a lot of people had, you know, that extra day off as far as the Wednesday, not only the Thursday and Friday, but also that Wednesday. So hope you enjoyed that. It was back to work Monday for most of for the majority of people, some of us even sooner. But again, enjoyed my time out of town and with family and friends. And we're back here as we're in the stretch run of the NFL season as we approach December and week 13. A lot of interesting games yesterday. And of course, we're going to begin with the game of the week, Denver falling to Kansas City 30-27 in Denver in overtime. This was, without question, the best game of the day as far as I'm concerned. I think, frankly, in terms of the level that it was played at, maybe the best game of the year. I still probably would take the Seattle game as my favorite game this year because that game was played at such a high defensive level with two. At that time, we thought those were two championship caliber teams at that time. We didn't know that Arizona was just going to completely just fall off the cliff. But at that time, they were two contenders. That was a tremendous game. But this game had it all. I mean, you know, give Kansas City a ton of credit, you know, to be up in the game and to fall behind on the road and to come back and win the way they did. You know, that takes a lot of character, a lot of intestinal fortitude from that team. That team, again, they are extremely well coached. I know Andy Reid has had some time management issues, and we understand that. But the guy, all he does is win. I mean, everywhere he goes, he's going to win. He's going to get you, you know, 9-10 wins, 9-11 wins, win a division, go make it to the playoffs, and go from there. He has, you know, again, helped resurrect the career of one Alex Smith. I know Alex Smith had some good years in San Francisco, but, you know, a lot of quarterbacks would have been left for dead after what transpired with Kaepernick basically taking his position. He's really played well for them in Kansas City, you know, since he got into Kansas City. Tough loss for Denver. That is a bitter loss when, you know, it felt like Denver won the game like two or three different times. Like when they came back, you see Simeon, especially in the second half, I thought both defenses were tired in the fourth quarter and overtime. Look at the fourth quarter overtime. There were 29 points scored. The first three quarters, I mean, the teams, you know, the only scores basically came on, you know, defensive, couple of defensive scores by Kansas City with special teams and defense. And, you know, Denver's defense, you know, set their offense up with some good field position. So that, you know, that was a defensive, you know, struggle for the better part of three and a half quarters. And all of a sudden, fourth quarter, the offense couldn't be stopped. And Simeon looked like John Elway or Peyton Manning as Brian. I mean, Simeon, for the game, had 368 yards passing, three touchdowns, but it was not enough. Tyreek Hill had a big game for Kansas City. He made every big play, had the touchdown that he bobbled, that luckily he bobbled, that tied the game. If it wasn't, he didn't bobble that ball, he would have been down at the 1 yard line, and Kansas City probably, and Luke goes on to probably lose that game. Now, the thing that everybody's talking about in this game is, of course, the decision by Gary Kubiak to kick, to have McManus kick a 62-yard field goal and to go for the win, basically, in essence, to go for the win. I frankly have no problem with it because, number one, you're kicking in Denver. That's number one. Number two, you know, City is one of these teams that doesn't do one thing great. Now they have a bunch of talent on defense. Let's not mistake that. They have all pros up and down the board on defense. Pretty good in the second with Peters in the secondary. We know what Houston can do, but they don't run the ball great. Alex Smith is not a great quarterback, but there's not one thing that they can't do well. So Kansas City is always going to be they're going to be in every game with their defensive special teams. And once they start getting some more defensive players back healthy, they're a team that I would not want to see in the playoffs. They're just a team that they just make you uncomfortable to play them with that pass rush and also with the physicality that they bring to the game. Just getting started here on this latest edition of Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. We'll talk some college football, but we will get to the Washington football team in terms of what happened on Thanksgiving Day. That's coming up and much, much more in this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. (347) 215-6180 on this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. Philadelphia Green Bay Monday night, big game for Philadelphia as they try to keep pace with the likes of Washington and also Tampa Bay for that last wild card spot. The division's gone. I mean, NFC East, Dallas. You'll be shocked if Dallas doesn't win the division. So right now, it's all about just making the playoffs. If you're the Giants, if you're the Redskins, and if you're certainly the Philadelphia Eagles. Green Bay is up 7-0 on Philadelphia. Again, 7-0. Green Bay is a dangerous team to be playing to as well. I know they struggle, but again, anytime you come on the field with Aaron Rodgers, you have a chance. So, again, a team like Green Bay, a team like Carolina, a team like San Diego, those are going to be teams that you just, you know, rather avoid, in particular San Diego and I'm losing my train of thought here. With the San Diego Chargers, who you want to try to avoid in terms of making the playoffs. There's going to be some dangerous teams. Carolina, San Diego and Carolina. Carolina's going to play every week hard moving forward. And we know they have an all-pro franchise caliber quarterback. All three, all those teams have big-time quarterbacks, which makes them dangerous on any Sunday that you play them. Washington falls to Dallas 31-26 on Thanksgiving Day. A game that pretty much went the way you probably thought it was going to go in terms of Washington being able to put up a bunch of yards but not be able to deal with the physicality of the Dallas Cowboys off the line. Dallas had over 162 yards rushing. They couldn't deal with Elliott. They couldn't deal with Prescott with some of his runs. The thing that you take away from this game from a Redskin perspective is a lot of frustration because they outgained Dallas 505 to 353. They didn't turn over the ball. They won the time of possession. So if I told you before the game that they were going to outgain Dallas not turn over the ball, and win a time of possession, you probably say, you know what, they have a pretty good chance to win. The problem is, the problem was, and the problem has been in the, over the course of the season, is that they have not converted when they've gotten down the red zone. Now, some of that was, you know, to their, you know, was self-inflicted. And that's and that has to be the most frustrating part about the game. There were four moves that the Redskins made that had you scratching your head. Number one, the Wildcat play on the first and goal at seven, when it was 7-0 Dallas at first and goal. Again, over the course of the season, Washington has struggled, Sean McVay in particular, with play calling in goal-to-goal situations. And they get down to the red zone, whether it's first and goal, second and goal, when they get inside the 10-yard line, they have struggled with red zone play calling. And why you would ever run a play, the Wildcat, against a team, you know, Dallas has some defensive deficiencies, but the one thing Dallas does well is stop the run. They rank third. They only give up like 81 yards rushing a game. They stopped the run, and that play had no chance, and you basically wasted a play against a team where in which you knew coming in you had to score touchdowns and not kick field goals. Of course, two missed field goals. The 43-yarder Hopkins has to make. He has to make that kick. That's all there is to it. The 55-yarder in the sun made zero sense. I mean, it made no sense to kick that field goal in the sun. And I put that squarely on Jay Gruden. You can't take that, attempt that kick in the sun. You heard Kirk Cousins at halftime saying that one of the reasons why they didn't take a lot of shots down the field in the first half was because of the sun. So you saw DeSean Jackson lose a ball in the sun, where he didn't know that Cousins had even thrown the ball. So the sun was a factor as far as Washington taking shots down the field in the first half. So there was no way Hopkins was going to make that kick 55 yards into the sun. That gave Dallas a short field. Dallas scores a touchdown. The third one, you have an onside kick at 24-19. After the DeSean Jackson 67-yard touchdown, you have an offside kick in the third quarter. Now, the whole idea was the fact that, you know, Gruden supposedly didn't trust his defense and was trying to steal a possession. Well, at some point, if you're going to win a game, your defense is going to have to step up. So you can't lose confidence in your defense to a point to where you're doing stuff that just puts them out there. If it doesn't work out, then you're looking at a short field for a Dallas offense. You know, you're handing them 3 points, minimum 3 points. Again, after that, you know, after the onside kick, Dallas recovers it. Washington actually, you know, had a shot at recovering, but Dallas recovers it, and Washington, you know, goes, before you know it, it's 31-19. So those are three major things that, you know, major moves that to me made zero sense in terms of for the Redskins, in terms of play calling, and also, you know, kicking off with the onside kick, attempting a 55-yard field goal. And I guess, you know, the fourth thing you can also say is going for two, which has become an epidemic in the NFL. These coaches chasing points early on. I mean, Washington's down 17-6. They score a touchdown. They're down 17-6, and instead of kicking the extra point, you know, you want to chase these points, you know, to make it, you know, to make it, excuse me, they're down to make it 20, to basically make it 17-12. So I get the whole premise that you're trying to make it cut the lead to a field goal. But again, you don't have to chase points in the third quarter. You know, one of these teams, and I'm going to mention it later on the program, a team lost a game and got burnt by doing that in a game yesterday by trying to chase points with these failed 2-point conversions. We saw what happened to Pittsburgh earlier this season against Dallas. It happens all the time with these teams. Now, mind you, had the Redskins kicked all the extra points, they would have been down 31-28 with a possibility to get the ball back before Dallas ran out the clock. Now, Dallas ended up with a possibility to tie the game. Now, it turns out to be a moot point because Dallas ended up getting a first down and in essence ran out the clock to win the game. So instead of being down 31-28, the Redskins were down 31-26. So overall, again, that was a tough spot for Washington to win. You know, you're talking about having basically minimum preparation time coming off a Sunday night game and having a short week and play on a Thursday afternoon. It was going to be a tough game regardless, but the Redskins didn't do anything to help themselves as far as, you know, with some of these decisions. And that's, listen, if they want to get to a point, I think physically Washington can play with any team in the NFL. I really do. I think that offense right now is playing as well as any offense in the league in terms of moving the ball. I mean, what the Redskins are putting up yards that are just out of this world. I mean, they had over 500 yards for the third time this season. They're not scoring enough points for those yards, so they should be averaging more than 25 points a game. But that, you know, their offense has been pretty much unstoppable, and they've moved it on any and everybody. You saw what they did against Minnesota a couple weeks back. So that's not the issue. The issue for them is converting in the red zone, and the issue for them is not having these self-inflicted wounds with some of the coaching decisions. So you have to clean that stuff up before you want to become a legit Super Bowl contender. And that's the stuff that separates the New England, the Seattle's from the world from a team like Washington. It's not so much the talent. It's so much those intangibles and, you know, coaching decisions and those. It's the little things that keep the Redskins, that will keep the Redskins from having some, doing some big things in the playoffs if they get to the playoffs. So they need to clean up some things. They'll get a chance this week when they travel out to Phoenix to play the Arizona Cardinals. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll talk some college football as he had a wild day at the Horseshoe and much, much more on this latest edition of Cyril Joaquin Sports Podcast. Philadelphia has tied the game at 7, so we could be in for a shootout. Neither defense has stopped the other quarterback in these first couple of drives. We'll be right back. Back to this latest edition of the Cyril Joaquin Sports Podcast. 347-215-6180 is the call number. The poll question of the night is, who is the NFL's best team right now? After 12 weeks, roughly 11 games, most teams have played only 11 games. A couple of teams, Cleveland has played 12 games, and you know they haven't won any of them. So right now, who is the best team in the NFL? We'll talk about that later on in the program, who I think the best team in the NFL is right now. Big weekend in college football. We'll begin with what happened in Columbus with a wild game with Ohio State taking out Michigan 30-27. It lived up to the billing and then some. It was a tremendous defensive game for the most part. Offenses kind of got loose late in the game, fourth quarter, and with the overtimes. If you're Michigan, you're obviously sick to your stomach. That was a game where I feel like, to be honest with you, I feel like Michigan is a better team than Ohio State. I felt like Michigan got robbed, and I posted that on Facebook when it happened with the fourth down play in overtime where Barrett ran the quarterback, you know, basically a quarterback draw to try to get the first down. I thought he got hit in midair. I thought he was a half yard short or close to, or a foot short. Maybe not a half yard, but a foot short. Of course, Jim Harbaugh agreed with me, no shocker there, but I really thought that to me, he didn't get the fourth down. He didn't get the first down. It would have marked the end of the game. A play later, you had the running back going in from 15 yards, and there you go. Ohio State took out Michigan 30-27. But frankly, let's be honest, Michigan really cost themselves that game with some turnovers. You know, that fumble at 10-7 was a big fumble when they were on Ohio State's 1 or 2 yard line. You can't put the ball on the ground at that point. Spates, who played well considering the injury, had two bad turnovers. had two interceptions, including a pick six that kept Ohio State in the game. Ohio State's offense, for the better part of, two and a half quarters or three quarters, did next to nothing against Michigan's defense. I mean, they didn't. They were doing. They couldn't throw the ball. Barrett could not throw the ball to save his life. They got the running game going, and late in the third quarter, early into the fourth quarter. But for the most part, Michigan State's defense did its job up to a certain point. I mean, but Michigan's offense really, put them in some bad spots with the turnovers, and those turnovers kept Ohio State in the game long enough for them to steal it at the end. And listen, you gotta give Ohio State credit. You gotta give them credit for overcoming a miss. Field goal missed field goals from the kicker, but I'm gonna be honest with you. I thought Michigan is a better team. I really do. But that's neither here nor there. Ohio State has put themselves in a position to where, they can be one of the four playoff teams. And basically, what the playoffs have come down to, it's come down to, Alabama is going to be in regardless of what happens. Clemson, they'll win if they win. They're in. Washington, if they win, they're in. And what happens, the question is, what happens with the Big Ten? Can a two-loss Penn State team, who's already beaten Ohio State once and who would have won the regular season and conference championship game, will they get in over a one-loss Ohio State team, which many people not only feel are one of the top four teams in the league in the country, but many people feel like Ohio State is the second-best team in the country behind Alabama, a team that's beaten Oklahoma, that's beaten UAB, that's beaten Wisconsin, Michigan, and leaving out one, Oklahoma, Wisconsin, Michigan, and they've beaten another good team that I'm leaving out. I cannot remember off the top of my head. They've beaten four quality teams. So they've beaten some major competition. But again, the problem is, can you put a team in the playoffs that didn't win their regular season nor their postseason conference tournament? Can you put that team in the playoffs? Should that team be in the playoffs? Obviously, they can put them in there, but should that team be in the playoffs? It's going to be a big decision for the committee. I think they're going to end up. What the committee wants is either Washington or Clemson to lose so they can put a combination of either Ohio State, Penn State, or Ohio State, Wisconsin. They want to put two Big Ten teams in the playoffs. That's what they really want to do. But in order for that to happen, either Washington or Clemson have to lose. Now, if both of them lose, that would be even sweeter. Or if you're the committee, you're rooting for Wisconsin because you can make a stronger case for Wisconsin, Ohio State being in over Wisconsin than you can for them being over Penn State. If Wisconsin beats Penn State, you can say, hey, Ohio State beat Wisconsin. They beat Wisconsin head-to-head. They also they have more losses than Ohio State. But if Penn State wins, Penn State would be kicking and screaming if they didn't get in the playoffs. And they would be right because, we beat Ohio State. We won our conference and regular season and conference and postseason Big Ten championship. And how do you not, we've been raving about how great the Big Ten is this year. How do you not take the Big Ten champion, regular season and postseason, and put them in the playoffs? So, again, the committee is sweating bullets over, in terms of that Ohio State, in terms of what happens with Ohio State, Wisconsin, and what happens with Clemson and Washington. Washington will go up against Colorado. Certainly a game that they can lose, though. They much rather see Colorado than USC. And Clemson will go against Virginia Tech, which should be, frankly, a walkover. I don't think Virginia Tech has anything for Clemson, to be honest with you. So we'll see what happens with that. Again, Alabama is in. The other college football news, you had, and to nobody's surprise, Charlie Strong out as a Texas coach, Tom Herman in from Houston. So he has some Texas roots, we all know. So he'll inherit a nice product. I mean, that Texas team has a lot of talent. They have top recruiting classes. He's a great recruiter. So that is a ready-made job. We know, and we know kind of pressure that he's going to have. But that they have as many, that might be the best job in college football. I mean, as far as resources, the conference, they have their own network. That is a tremendous job. Herman has it. Herman will get it. Oregon will stay at LSU. Jimbo Fisher is going to stay at Florida State. So, you know, that there you go with that in terms of college football. We don't know what's going to happen with Notre Dame. I mean, I don't think they're going to fire. I think it would be more likely that Kelly leaves Notre Dame, resigns, than it would be him getting fired, to be honest with you. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll go back to the league when no contract is guaranteed. We'll be right back. Philadelphia, Green Bay. Green Bay's driving. They have absolutely moved the ball at will against that Philadelphia defense. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is on his way to having a big game. Again, this looks like it could possibly be a shootout, but they're moving the ball up and down the field against Philadelphia's defense right now, so we'll see what happens. They're driving. They're at about the, I want to say, 26, 27-yard line. Ended the first quarter, 7-7 Philadelphia, Green Bay. An absolute must-win, really a must-win for both teams. More so, I mean, again, Green Bay, I don't think Green Bay is going to make the playoffs this year, but Philadelphia still has some playoff aspirations. And, you know, again, they're trying to keep up with the likes of, again, Washington and Tampa Bay in particular, as those are going to be their main competition for that sixth and final playoff spot. Giants take out Cleveland 27-13. Giants improved to 8-3, win their sixth straight game. Cleveland falls to 0-12, and you know, when it rains, it pours. You know, Cleveland's I've seen worse teams, but I don't think I've seen a team play this hard week in and week out and still have nothing to show for it. That's probably the most frustrating thing about watching Cleveland. It's not like they've quit. If you watch Cleveland, they play hard week in and week out. They just don't have, you know, they just don't have the horses, and you know, frankly, they're not right now. You know, I can't even knock the coaching. I mean, I know they're 0-12, but that roster is just, you know, the roster is dreadful. I mean, they have Terrell Pryor, and that's basically it. Like that talent, they have no talent. Well, Terrell Pryor and Joe Thomas, those are the two best players, Joe Thomas and Terrell Pryor. Outside of that roster, that, you know, the cupboard's bare. Again, you can, you know, people can knock the Giants. This was a 20-13 game at one point. If you're the Giants, you just keep on winning. You know, your defense is playing well. Peter Paul had another big day. He looks close to what he once was. I don't think he'll ever be the player that he once was, considering, you know, with the hand, but he's playing great right now. I think he has about 5.5-6 sacks in his last two games. Had a interception and running back for a touchdown that's, you know, basically, you know, put the game away for the most part. Eli was efficient, not spectacular, but he didn't have any turnovers. And the Giants did what they had to do, is go on the road, get a victory, and go about their business. And that, it's not about, most of these games are close. So I don't understand people criticizing the Giants for winning close games. Because if you look at the NFL, about 70-80% of these games are decided by one score, by, you know, 8 points or less, or 7 points or less. I mean, these games, even games where teams basically don't have any business on the field. Look at the Jets and Patriots last night. I mean, that game could have went either way. As Green, it looks like a catch. Yes, touchdown. Devontae Adams catches a touchdown from Aaron Rodgers. They go up 14. Well, if they can make the extra point, which has been an adventure in the NFL in the last couple of weeks this season, Green Bay will be up 14-7. So the Giants go about their business, improve to 8-3, keep pace with Dallas. They have a showdown with Dallas in a couple of weeks. Be looking forward to that. Cleveland, you know, needs a bye and a hug, and just needs their season to end like ASAP. Minnesota fell to Detroit on Thanksgiving, 16-13. Detroit improves to 7-4 and takes total control of that division as they sweep the Vikings and in essence have a two-game lead. Minnesota falls to 6-5. Of course, the big play in that game was the Darius Slay interception late in the fourth quarter off Sam Bradford, and that led to the field goal by Prater. Again, this is what Detroit does. Every game, Detroit's played 11 games this year. All 11 of them have been decided by 7 points or less, and they've won 7 of them. So it's just remarkable how, you know, they have a penchant for playing these close games and for winning these close games. Like, they find a way to make a play. Things, they get the right, they get bounces go their way. It is unbelievable the kind of season Detroit is having right now. Because you remember, coming into the season, nobody expected anything out of Detroit. No Calvin Johnson. You know, they lost a couple of players off their defense. Nobody expected anything out of Detroit, especially in that division. People thought it was going to be ruled by Green Bay as well as Minnesota. But Detroit right now is your division leader. And definitely, unless, you know, something catastrophic happens, Detroit's probably going to make the playoffs and win that division. Right now, they're in great shape, up two games ahead of the the Minnesota Vikings. Arizona falls to Atlanta 38-19. Arizona falls to 4-6-1 on the season. Atlanta improves to 7-4 as they lead the NFC South. A efficient, workmanlike performance for the Atlanta Falcons. They did what they had to do. It was not spectacular. It was just efficient, and you know, they really dominated this game in the third and after halftime. This was a close game. You know, this was like a 17-13 game at halftime. But they ran away in the second half with this football game. And really, you know, you look at their numbers. You know, Ryan was not spectacular. He was good. Julio Jones did nothing. Gabriel had a couple of touchdown catches. Freeman had a nice day. The Atlanta defense played well at, you know, holding down Carson Palmer and the Atlanta, and for the most part, the Arizona offense. Now, David Johnson continues to be spectacular, despite how much, you know, Arizona's offense has struggled, in particular going Carson Palmer, who's been awful this year. David Johnson has frankly been playing at a all-pro level, and if Arizona was in playoff contention, he would be strongly considered for, you know, possibly, you know, MVP. He's been playing that well. He's played that well, had over, you know, about 150 yards of total offense. And again, he's the one bright light in what has been basically a dark season for the Arizona Cardinals. 347-215-6180 is your call number. We'll be right back with much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Sports Podcast. Seattle falls to Tampa Bay 14-5. Yes, that was the final score, 14-5. Seattle falls to 7-3-1 on the season. Tampa Bay improves to 6-5. This was, without question, in my mind, the best defensive performance all week by a team. Tampa Bay was all over Russell Wilson, forcing into two interceptions. They had about 6 sacks. Gerald McCoy, Levante David, guys like that were all over the place. This is despite the fact that Tampa Bay's offense, after the first quarter, did next to nothing. Seattle defense, you know, basically shut them down. James Winston had a nice day. He wasn't spectacular. 21-28, 220 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a horrible interception that kept Seattle in the game. Doug Martin had about 80 yards rushing. Again, the story of this game was the Tampa Bay defense. And right now, you know, Tampa Bay is a team that, again, is kind of going under the radar because they had some inconsistent days, inconsistent weeks. But right now, they are 6-5, playing well, playing their best football of the season at the right time. They beat Atlanta opening week. So the next time they play Atlanta, that could be for the division title. But Tampa Bay also has sights on it. They're not for the division title. They have sights on a possible wild card spot, as they are just a game, a half game behind the Washington Redskins at 6-5. At the half game at 6-5, compared to Washington being 6-4 and 6-4 and 1. Again, the defense is all over the place. I mean, I haven't seen that. Their defense hasn't played that well all season long. Seattle had come in and, you know, was playing well, especially offensively. Russell Wilson was playing well, but they just destroyed the Seattle offensive line. I mean, it just killed them. I mean, they were living in the backfield. Russell Wilson was running for his life for most of the ball game. Impressive performance by Tampa Bay. Really a statement game, letting you know that they are going to be a team to watch in the month of December, without question. New Orleans destroys the Rams 49-21. They improved to 5-6, keep their faint playoff hopes alive. The Rams, you know, they are the Rams. Going to them, you know, 6-10, 7-9 again for like the 10th straight season. They fall to 4-7. The Rams defense actually have been playing well over the last four games, only giving up 50 points, but they just got lit up in this game. I mean, Drew Brees, and again, Drew Brees, you know, I think we take for granted how great of a quarterback Drew Brees is. This guy is going to end the season with over 5,000 yards again, 71% of his passes, and probably over 40 touchdowns. I mean, that's just, you know, ho-hum, another Drew Brees season. I mean, this guy is not only a Hall of Fame quarterback, he's frankly just one of the all-time great quarterbacks to ever play. I mean, he's that good. Again, year in, year out, this guy puts up numbers, just these ridiculous video game numbers on a team that has no defense to speak of. I mean, no defense. He goes into every game knowing that he has to score 30 points or more just to keep his team in the game against most teams. Not the Rams, of course, but more times than not, Drew Brees knows he has a team. He has to put up at least 30 points for his team to have a chance to win. They had over 555 yards of total offense. This was a 28-21 game at halftime, but you knew the Rams could not keep up a track meet against the New Orleans Saints. That's right. You know, that is the Saints' specialty, is going up and down the field, and when they want to get you there, you know, they're like the old Phoenix Suns, 7 seconds or less. They want to get you in a tit for tat, touchdown for touchdown game, and that was not going to work out for the Rams. Now, Jared Goff did have 3 touchdown passes, so he had, you know, his best day in his short 2-game career as a starting quarterback. Had 1 interception, had, you know, did some nice things. So, you know, that's something, you know, to build on if you are a fan of the Rams. But you know, they don't want to hear the Rams. Ram fans don't want to hear 6-10 again or 7-9. I mean, I don't blame them. I mean, every year they come in with the, you know, best defensive line in football, all this talent on the defense end. Todd Gurley's one of the best running backs, but it ends up 6-10, 7-9. San Diego falls to Houston. Oh, excuse me, Charger fans. I apologize for that. San Diego takes out Houston 21-13, and who didn't see this coming? Houston falls to 6-5. San Diego improves to 5-6. Again, San Diego's a team that you just don't want to play if you're trying to win a division, if you're trying to make the playoffs. They can play with anybody on a given day. I think their worst loss has been by like 8 points. Like, that's been their worst loss all season. It was by 8 points to the Denver Broncos a few weeks back in Denver. So they're a team that's capable. You know, when you have a franchise quarterback, a future Hall of Fame quarterback like Phillip Rivers, they can play with anybody. And Houston, again, and I've said this time after time, Houston's just not that good. They weren't as good. They were not as good as their record indicated when they were 6-3 a couple weeks ago. Now they've fallen to 6-5, and Houston's in major trouble. Osweiler was awful last night. It was awful. Only had 3 yesterday. Only, you know, 3 interceptions. And again, Phillip Rivers, another big day for him. 3 touchdowns, 1 interception, 242 yards passing. Carolina falls to the Raiders 35-32. Carolina, you know, playoff hopes are basically done at 4-7. The Raiders keep on rolling at 9-2. This was a strange game because this looked like this game had 45-10 written all over it. When Oakland was up 24-7, all of a sudden, you know, Derek. I get them confused with Derek and David. Derek Carr pulls his, you know, dislocates his finger snapping the football, which is, you know, as he, you know, during the center quarterback exchange, he dislocates his finger, which I had never seen in my life. The finger and it, you know, it sucked. It literally took the Raiders a quarter to gather themselves, even after Carr returned with this, you know, Michael Jackson glove on, this black Michael Jackson glove. Took him a while to get back into it. Carolina ran off 25 straight points. And here's an example, and this is what I was talking about earlier in the program about the 2-point conversion. So Carolina is in the midst of a, you know, a big time run. The Raiders are, you know, trying to catch their breath as they watched their star quarterback go down to an injury, which they didn't know about how serious it was going to be. So it's 20-24. Okay, it's 13-24-13. Ginn scores a touchdown, the long touchdown pass, and they go for two. They miss it. It's 24-19. So they score again, okay, Kelvin Benjamin touchdown to make it 25-24. Again, they go for two. They fail. It's 25-24. So, you know, this, I mean, Stewart scores a touchdown to make it 25-24. Then they fail on 2-point conversion. And then Benjamin scores a touchdown. They kick the extra point. It's 32-24. Raiders score, get a 2-point conversion, go on to win the game, and win the game 35-32. Now, had Carolina kicked the extra points, okay, and not chased those points in the third quarter, they would have been up 34-24 and forced the Raiders to score, forced it to be a 2-possession game, okay, instead of a 1-possession game. So it's a big difference between 34-24 versus 32-24. Now, I see these coaches do this week in, week out. The group being, of course, the coaching group being led by one Mike Tomlin, who thinks it's his birthright to go for two. And it's just, I just don't get it. I don't get it whatsoever. Of why you have to chase points when you don't have to chase points. It makes no sense, because once you fail the first time, then you're basically chasing points for the rest of the game. So again, Carolina should have been up by 10 points at 34-24. And if they're up 34-24, it is a totally different game. Matter of fact, I will go to adventure to say that if they're up 34-24, they probably don't win the game, to be honest with you. They probably don't win the game. It's a totally different football game. New England takes out the Jets 22-17. New England improves to 9-2. The Jets fall to 3-8. The Jets play one of their best games of the season, but yet it is not enough. And this is the classic case of a bad football team. The other team comes out with basically a C minus game, okay, or C game. They lose their second best player in Rob Gronkowski. And yet, it's still not enough. And you're at home, but yet again, it's still not enough. New England made enough defensive plays, Brady made enough plays in the fourth quarter to eke out a victory over the Jets. In a game that New England just looked to me like they were going through the motions, to be honest with you. I'm not going to give the Jets too much credit, because New England looked like they were just going to just act like they were just going to show up and then the Jets would roll over. But the Jets did not do that. So I give the Jets some credit for not rolling over and just, you know, basically conceding the game. They did fight. They did play hard, but it was not enough as New England improves to 9-2 on the season. Raiders and New England are tied up top of the AFC. New England has the conference record advantage, so they have that tiebreaker, as the Raiders are in second in the AFC. Buffalo over Jacksonville 28-21. Buffalo goes to 6-5. Jacksonville falls to 2-9. A game that Buffalo really didn't play well. Jacksonville played extremely hard. Jacksonville knocked around Tyrone Taylor, had a bunch of sacks. Really played well defensively. Had 183 yards rushing in the game. LeSean McCoy had a nice game. He's really had a nice season when he's been healthy. 19 carries, 103 yards rushing. couple of touchdowns. Buffalo still in the mix to make the playoffs at 6-5, so they keep their playoff hopes alive. Just wanted to mention this before you head out. Of course, we all heard about what transpired at Ohio State today. Just, you know, an act of just outright just, you know, terror with what happened with Abdul Razin Artan, you know, a student at Ohio State who, crashed his car, tried to run over students, then got out the car and started, you know, basically cutting students with a butcher knife before he was shot and killed by a campus police officer, which in minutes. So the reaction was quick. And, you know, it's just, you know, you just never know what goes on in these college campuses. It's, you know, you, if you're a parent, if you know somebody, niece, nephew, sibling, anything could pop off at any time on these campuses. I mean, you never know what's going on in somebody's head. Mental illness is real. Now, you know, I, again, the easy thing to do is to blame it on, to say, all right, it's a terroristic act. Because, you know, not because, but part of the reason, you know, he was Muslim. But, you know, I'm just here to say, you know, all Muslims, you know, contrary to what may be thought of, all Muslims, or I don't know what the percentage of Muslims are, not terrorists. So, and that's the unfortunate part, that if you're a Muslim who lives in this country, especially going to college, you're just trying to graduate, you're just trying to live your life. It's unfortunate that this guy has to make your life harder based on his actions. And it's not fair to label a group of people based on the actions of one nutcase, to be honest with you. It's not, it's unfortunate, and it's just, you know, it's something that you just don't want to see. Thankfully, there were no, up to the last time I heard, there were no fatalities. You do have one student, the one person that's in critical condition. You know, our thoughts and prayers are with that student. But Frank, thankfully, I mean, we've heard, you know, listen, the Virginia Tech situation is not that, you know, it was about nine years ago, back in 2007, I believe, where, you know, people, you know, got killed. You know, that was, you know, people got shot and killed in that situation. This one was not to that level, but still a scary situation. So, you know, thoughts and prayers are with that. Again, happening a couple of days after, you know, the Ohio State-Michigan game. And I just, you know, I thought, I couldn't believe when I heard it, but, you know, again, this is the world we live in right now. But again, it's unfortunate and unfair to label a religion or label a culture based on an act of one nut job. Top five teams, as you know, make that transition. 14-7 Green Bay. Green Bay has the ball about midfield. It looks like Philadelphia has no answer for Aaron Rodgers. And again, he's still Aaron Rodgers. Don't be fooled by all this talk about what he can and cannot do. He's still Aaron Rodgers. Don't forget about that. Top five teams, I would say, number one right now, I still have to say that New England at number one. Despite what happened to them yesterday, I still would put Seattle at number two, Dallas three, the Raiders four, and five. You know what? Five. I really like Atlanta. Atlanta's lost some close games. Their defense has improved. We know what Matt Ryan can do. We know they can run the ball. I think Atlanta's played extremely well this season. I have them as my 15, but again, that's subject to change. You can put Denver in there, a couple other teams you could be looking at. The Giants are playing well right now, so I can't sleep on the Giants in terms of how well they're playing, though you'd like to see more out of that running game before you're completely sold on what they can do for the rest of the season. But again, they're playing well, 1-6 straight. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Cyril Joquin Sports Podcast, 14-7 Green Bay. Enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy the game. So long.